The Deep Lake Mystery by Carolyn Wells. Chapter 1. A Stately Pleasure Dome. As I look back on my life, eventful enough in spots, but placid, even monotonous in the long stretches between spots, I think the greatest thrill I ever experienced was when I saw the dead body of Sampson Tracy. Imagine to yourself a man dead in his own bed, with no sign of violence or maltreatment, eyes partly closed, as he might be peacefully thinking, and no expression of fear or horror on his calm face. Now add to your mental picture the fact that he had round his brow a few flowers arranged as a wreath, more flowers diagonally across his breast, like a garland, clasped in his right hand, against his heart, an ivory crucifix, and in his left hand an orange. Sticking up from behind his head showed the plume of a red feather duster, and draped round all this, like a frame, was a red chiffon scarf, a filmy but voluminous affair, deftly tucked in here and there, and encircling all the strange and bizarre details I have enumerated. On a pillow near the dead face lay two small crackers and a clean folded handkerchief. As I stared, my imagination flew to the Indians or the ancient Egyptians, who provided their dead with food and toilet implements which were buried with them. But in this case, I believe it was Abraham Lincoln who said, "If you have a story to tell, begin at the beginning, go through with the tale, and leave off at the ending." So, as I most assuredly have a story to tell, I will begin at the beginning and follow the prescribed directions. It all began, I suppose, the night Keeley Moore came to see me about fishing tackle. Key is a wonderful detective and all that, but when it comes to fishing, he's mighty glad to ask my advice. And Lord knows, I'm glad to give it to him. We used to go fishing together every summer. Then Key took it into his silly head to get married, and to a girl who cares nothing about fishing. So from that you can see how things are. But this time Key seemed really excited about his prospects of fishing through the summer months. "We're going to Wisconsin," he told me, with a note of joyousness in his voice. "And Gray, do you know there are more than 2,000 lakes in one county out in that foolish old state?" "I'd like to fish in all of them," I said, with my usual lack of moderation. "You can't do that, but you can fish in a few if you like. Laura sends you, and I back it up, an invitation to come out there as soon as we get settled and stay as long as you can." "That's a tempting bid," I told him, "but I can't impose on newlyweds like that. I'll go to the inn or lodge or whatever they have out there and see you every day." "No, we want you with us. We've taken a fairly good-sized house for the season, and you must be our guest. Laura's asking a few of her friends, and I want you." Well, he had little trouble in persuading me, once I felt convinced that his wife's invitation was in good faith, and I planned to go out there early in August. They were going in July, which left them time enough to get settled and get their home in running order. So I went to Wisconsin in August, glad enough to get away from the city's heat and noise and dirt. Deep Lake, the choice of the Moores, was in Oneida County, which is designated among the scenic sections of Wisconsin as North Woods, Eastern. And scenic it surely was. The last part of the train ride had shown me that, and when we were motoring from the railroad station to the Moore bungalow, I was impressed with the weird beauty all about. It was dusk, and the tall trees looked black against the sky. Long shadows of hemlocks and poplars fell across the road as the last glow of the sunset was fading, and the reflection in the lakes of surrounding scenery was clear, though dark.